Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. This week, it's our beloved columnist and Albany bureau chief of the New York Daily News, Ken Lovett. In fact, he knows so much that we keep inviting him back, and we're thinking about changing the Capital Connection to the Ken Lovett Show. Welcome back, Ken.
It's good to be here.
Okay, so let's talk about Dean Skelos and Shelley Silver. They're about to stand trial after months of legal wrangling and lawyers making pleas, but it's the federal government. And there's an old saying, when the federal government wants you, they get you.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Bruno being the one exception in recent years, but...
And it took a lot out of his side, that's for sure.
It took a lot out of him in years and years and years. You know, it's going to be very interesting to see what goes down. If these go to trial, Shelley Silver insists he's going to trial, the former Assembly Speaker charged with corruption. Dean Skelos, the former Senate Majority Leader. A lot of people think he's going to plead out before his trial starts. Dean Skelos, before his trial starts in mid-November.
Is that because some things are black and white and some things are gray?
And it also involves his kid.
Yeah.
And he may want to see if he can cut a deal to protect his kid. We don't know. But this is what the word is. We'll see.
Now, in that case, just for those people who are listening, reprise it. It's that he tried to get a job using his official function, tried to get a job for his son-in-law.
Well, he did. No, for his son. He got a job. He got a job with his son for someone he does business with. You know, he basically, as the feds say, tried to monetize his office.
God forbid any legislator ever did that, because there wouldn't be three guys. Well, there might be five left in the hole.
Some don't have kids. No, so with Skelos, we'll see what happens there. Shelley Silver, his trial starts first, and you've been seeing a flurry of motions and what the prosecution, U.S. Attorney Preparara's office, what he wants to introduce. Some argue it's trying to, you know, in a way it's poisoning the jury pool because all these negative stories about Silver is coming out. But
too late.
But yeah, and we're seeing exactly what the feds are going to do, what their approach is going to be. It's going to be very interesting. You know, if it's anything like the Bruno trial, some of the most interesting stuff that came out wasn't necessarily what was illegal, but what was legal and what was going on. And you know, when you have someone like Shelley Silver, who was speaker for over two decades and who was very powerful and knew all these people, to see what is going to come out of this trial besides just the charges against him, but really how government works, it's really going to be revealing.
As a result of the profundity of what you just said, obviously, Ken Lovett, there must be a lot of knees shaking in the legislature right now.
I would think so. I would certainly think so. Although, you know, once you get the speaker and the majority leader, usually you try to work your way up. It's a little less exciting to then go after rank and filer. But we've seen both the U.S. attorney, you know, Preparara from the Southern District, and the Brooklyn U.S. attorney, you know, in the Eastern District, and even the Northern District, bring cases against rank and filers. So I don't think that's going to stop.
In fact, we've even seen, when you say, you know, they're the biggies at the top, you're quite right, but we've seen people going to jail for claiming reimbursement expenses when they didn't deserve them.
Right, and that's a big one. And we just saw William Scarborough, the now former assemblyman from Brooklyn or Queens. He's going to be going to prison for over a year because he got hit with federal charges and state charges for both claiming expenses that he didn't incur at the taxpayer expense, over $40,000 worth, and for misusing his campaign funds.
Well, look, you know, you're a great reporter, but I wanted to ask you a philosophical question, if I might, Ken. Why in hell do they do this?
Look, some it's entitlement. Some it's
entitlement, you mean they say, okay, I won this office, now I can steal all I want.
Yeah, or you know, and some probably don't even see it as stealing. You know, and Scarborough actually said this. We haven't had a raise since 1999, and
oh, my heart bleeds blue borscht for them.
I'm saying so.
You can
all of
quit.
A sudden, you're like, how am I going to get a little more money? So I'll pad my expenses. It's not that big a deal, and you know that's the mentality that leads down the slope. And then you know, then you also have people who think they're smarter than the system, and you know, accept straight out bribes, and you know, we saw that with Eric Stevenson, a a real backbencher, a nobody from the Bronx, an assemblyman who, you know, was caught on tape basically bragging the reason people went to jail is they were dumb and, you know, implying that, you know, I'll never get caught. Now he's in prison.
Amazing. Just amazing. You know, I'm old. I've been here for so many years. I've watched it again and again. And I keep thinking. I remember there was a guy in Massachusetts who went to jail who told a colleague, he said to him, I think it was a former speaker, who said, I just stayed too long.
Well, and a lot of people say that about Shelley Silver. Yeah. And you know, a lot of people felt that about Joe Bruno. I mean, and now he was acquitted, but, you know, certain things Bruno did at the end there to help his kids and get them jobs and do all these things, a lot of people felt that, you know, he stayed on too long. He was trying to set up his family for when he left. And, you know, Shelley Silver stayed on too long. One interesting theory that you'll hear some people say about Silver is that Silver is a very smart guy and always knew where the line was drawn. And the difference now is that Preparara has moved that line.
He moved the line.
He
sure.
moved the line. So
I believe so.
Shelley always went up to the line or where he thought the line was, and now the line is a different line, and that's what got him caught.
Yeah. There was maybe an apocryphal story, I don't know, you'd probably know, about Shelley having said to somebody he gives money to the district attorney in New York City, and if the check isn't canceled, he knows he's not going to get indicted.
Yeah, I'm sure there's people a lot of people who use that litmus test.
Ken Lovett of the Daily News. There's a big fight in New York that's coming up about assisted suicide. There are many of us, I'm one of them, who truly believe, hey, you want to go, you should have the power to go and to end it. However, this really does defy the rigors of many organized religions and other people who feel strongly about that. So what's happening there?
Well, California just passed it and right. became, I think, the third or fourth state to pass it. Oregon, Washington, Vermont, and I may be leaving one out, and now California. And New York is seen as the next big battleground. The legislation was introduced earlier this year. It didn't go anywhere. But now people are turning to New York. Now that California's done it, you know, the first big state to really do it. And the fight is going to be next year, whether there's support. You know, even the sponsors know it's a heavy lift. But look, you know, people would have said that about gay marriage a decade ago. And that went really quickly once, you know, the ball got rolling. So now you have people lining up on both sides. You have people who want it and patients, you know, advocate groups who say, hey, like you said, if someone is suffering and they feel that their time is up and there's no other choice, they'll make the argument not only does it give them peace of mind, but it's also almost like insurance. They say in other states like Oregon that have had it, not everyone who signs up for it to use, you know, you don't actually sign up, but not everyone who registers to get the poison that kills you uses it. But they just feel more comfortable knowing they have that option. However, you have a big opposition, starting with the Catholic Church and Cardinal Timothy Dolan. You have various other groups that have come out against it. I had a story earlier this week about a guy named J.J. Hansen, used to work for Elliot Spitzer and David Patterson. He now works for the Patients Activist Group. I don't have the exact title, but he's the president of it. He's suffering from brain cancer, the same brain cancer that Brittany Maynard, the woman in California who really made this a national issue, she was suffering with this brain cancer. And she moved to Oregon, which had the law in place, so she could take her life, you know, the assisted suicide law. So he has the same cancer, and he's coming out against this. He says that he feels like a lot of people who are critics of it, that A, it devalues human life. On top of that, they'll argue, the critics, that it could lead to doctors and insurance companies and even family members who don't want the burden of someone.
Yeah.
You know, that,
yeah.
Hey, and he also had, Hansen also had another argument that I hadn't heard before. And his is, it could impact clinical trials, that you're reducing the population who could try for clinical trial for experimental treatment and things like that. Mm-hmm. That was one of his arguments. So
how much does religion get involved in this? There are a lot of people who are Catholic in the state legislature. That does not mean Catholics always follow the dictates of the church. We know that mm-hmm. that's not true. We look at Andrew Cuomo. We look at Mario Cuomo. We know that there's a lot
of pro-choice Catholics.
Yes, and it's like saying that every Jew in the legislature or any other place follows the Grand Rabbi of Jerusalem, which we know isn't true. So what is your sense, hanging around the legislature, of this connection between religion and substantive issues like this?
I think on an issue like this, that's a good question. On an issue like this, I think it's probably more in play. I think you'll see people wrestling with this one. Like you said, I'm sure there are plenty of Catholics and Jewish lawmakers who will support it, but I'm sure for a lot, it's going to be a tough vote. The polls have not been definitive. As a matter of fact, I think the polls may be against it, but I haven't seen one recently.
Well, if the polls are against it, it's not going to happen.
Well, right. And I don't believe the governor is for it at this point, too. However, since he last made a statement on it, he's gone dramatically to the left, so maybe maybe he'll change his mind.
It might be one of those symbolic things. Let's go to another place which I really want to travel to. Get it? Uber. I love the concept of Uber.
Mm-hmm.
The people love the concept of Uber. The guys who had million-dollar taxi medallions in New York
hate the concept of Uber.
This has killed them.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm writing something about it right now. It's fascinating to me that you see what politicians do. Now, Andrew Cuomo clearly wants to allow the state legislature to pass provisions, mainly in the insurance law, I believe, that will allow Uber to come, quote, upstate. And he's making a good bet on this. I believe that in New York City, Mayor de Blasio has a different opinion.
Yes, although that's also evolved now. Let's back up a little. I think Andrew Cuomo really became an Uber fan because de Blasio was at war with them.
Oh, that's a good point.
And that was in the middle of their fight, and all of a sudden, you know, the governor came in and said, well, really, this is going to be a statewide issue, so there should be state regulations, and tried to undercut the mayor on that, and did. The mayor had looked for a one-year cap on how much Uber could grow in the city. They wanted to do studies to see the impact of Uber both on traffic, on the taxi, and on everything.
But you're following the money, I take it. Who gives money to which
right.
politicians?
And the taxis are big supporters and are powerful, the taxi industry and livery industry in New York City. So the mayor wanted to cap growth, which you don't usually hear that, you know, a government getting involved in capping growth of an industry, a burgeoning industry. But ultimately, there was a lot of pressure, you know, with what the governor did. Uber spent a lot of money on ads, and they, you know, they were sending direct messages to all their customers. And finally, the mayor kind of backed down and said, "All right, we're gonna, you know, we're still gonna do the study, but we're gonna leave them, to do what they do. But we can always come back and deal with it again if it's an issue."
You would think these guys would learn at some point that sometimes you should let the people have what they want. And they clearly want this Uber thing.
Well, and it was interesting because one of the things the mayor did, you know, the mayor's big issue is economic inequality, you know, income inequality and all those kinds of things. And yet, you know, you really saw it here in his argument. When he was arguing against Uber, it was with such disdain. He kept saying, you know, this billion-dollar company, you know, another billion-dollar company. And you would think a city like New York, where, you know, where you want a big tax base, would welcome such a company as long as they're operating by the rules and regulations and things like that. But it really was said so disdainfully, but it showed an insight into where he's coming from, I thought.
I also think it shows, as you say, an evolution in the governor's thinking about how he does these things. And, you know, every once in a while you look at what the people want, you give it to them. And so there's that. There used to be something in Albany we used to talk about all the time called fetcher bills, which is somebody puts a bill in the legislature and it's going to gore somebody's ox. And all of a sudden the goree starts to give money to that politician. I don't know whether that, I haven't looked into this enough to know whether that is the case here. But, you know, there's a lot of money in the taxi industry. If you had $1 million medallion for a cab, and all of a sudden, let's just say, and I don't know the case here, it's worth $500,000. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt they got devalued, but the reality is technology, you know, I mean, what industry hasn't been impacted by technology?
Your radio, newspapers.
Radio, newspapers, yeah. Stores, mom and pop stores, hardware stores, record stores, bookstores, you name it.
Sure.
So, I mean, why would the taxi industry be immune? And the argument
because they give enough money to the mayor.
Well, they give enough money to the mayor. You know, but in this regard, government always has a problem, I think, in both regulating and acknowledging progress, especially technology, you know, technology-wise. And oftentimes, you know, government is behind the people on that.
Yeah.
And, you know, you see that on anything, whether it's internet gambling now, whether they're trying to come to terms with it,
sure.
Whether it's Uber, you know, all these kinds of things. And, you know, this is all part of the rapid rise of technology in our lives.
As long as there are two of us talking politics here, let's move to something we've referenced up until now, and that's the mayor. All of a sudden we hear that the governor has decided to support one of the potential opponents of de Blasio for mayor the next time. What do you make of that?
Well, he's certainly sending a message. You know, these guys, and these guys I mean de Blasio and Cuomo.
And who's the opponent there?
Well, it was Hakeem Jeffries, the congressman from Brooklyn, a former state assemblyman. He's considered a potential candidate. Cuomo has agreed to host a fundraiser for him, not for mayor, but for his congressional reelection next year. The mayoral race is a year after that. But it certainly sends a message when you're warring with the mayor that you would publicly, you know, go out and hold a fundraiser, even if it's a congressional one, for one of his possible, you know, primary opponents. But the reality is, you know, Cuomo and de Blasio, who before de Blasio took office, told us what good buds they were, how great and close they were, and this was going to be a different relationship. And they really went from being really good friends to frenemies to now just outright enemies. They don't like each other. They, you know, begrudgingly have to work with each other. The mayor realizes anything he wants from the state has to come through the governor, and that's a lot. And so they have to work with each other. But, you know, this is a sour relationship. And normally I would sit here and say, well, that's normal for governors and mayors. But these guys said it was going to be a lot different. And in a lot of ways, it is a lot different. It's more acrimonious than I've seen in a long time since the early days of Rudy Pataki.
Rudy Pataki, I like it. Let's talk a little bit about the proposed constitutional convention that New Yorkers will have to vote on in 2017, because it keeps coming around. According to the state constitution, you got to vote whether you should have a constitutional convention. I have my deep doubts about it. I think it might be just another, you know, pony show, you know, which we have seen before, in which the regular politicians elect people who are their friends or their political, you know, followers. And, you know, you get to spend a ton of money, you get people's hopes up, and nothing really happens. And now Jerry Benjamin, my very good friend, the head of the Benjamin Institute at New Paltz, I think is wildly for this. It's not that I oppose it. I just have real questions as to whether it's worth the effort.
I have a feeling, though, that you're going to see it, you know, and this is 2 years out, so things can change. I think you might see it pass this time because people are so fed up with what's been going on in Albany, even more so than in past years.
Yeah, but won't they be empowering, Ken, the very guys that they're fed up with?
That's the argument the critics had. The last time it went down, a lot of the good government groups either opposed it or they were on the sidelines silent for that very reason. That was their biggest fear. But, you know, I remember in all my years in Albany, I haven't seen really a more hostile press conference. And the day after it went down, the good government groups, which are called goo-goos up here, they held a press conference, a joint press conference, to say, what can we do to fix Albany? And the media was just all over them for about a half hour. Didn't you just have your best opportunity to fix Albany and you stayed silent or opposed it, blah, blah, blah? I think you got to try something. I mean,
well, that's the Jerry.
And the reality is, what they come up with, you know, it's going to have to go before the voters anyway.
So why people are investigating the Buffalo Billions, just by way of extending the question. Cuomo, coming into office, knew that he was in trouble and the Democrats were in trouble up in Buffalo, decided and kept his word that he was going to put $1 billion into Buffalo. But Preparo, who has really been watching Cuomo carefully, we think, has now started to investigate this.
He's looking into the potential bid rigging of projects up there.
By the people who...
Well, the bids were done by SUNY Polytechnic Institute. It's headed by a guy named Dr. Elaine Calieros, who has been around the state, known for his nanotech stuff for, you know, 2 decades, 3 decades now. Really started under Mario Cuomo and has been close to every governor since, every majority leader in the Senate, every assembly speaker, very powerful man.
Highest paid public servant in New York.
Yes. I think it's $800,000 all told between what his state salary and his other salary. And so he's very close to the governor. And the way the bids were written, and this was done by the Investigative Post, I believe, out of Buffalo, the way the bids were originally written, it looked like it was going to be for one person, only one person qualified, one company.
And that person happened to be a big donor. Yeah, big contributor.
To Cuomo. It was rewritten, but the guy still got the bid. You know,
surprise.
Obviously, the governor says, I had nothing to do with it. It was all SUNY. However, when the bids were announced, it wasn't SUNY that put out the release. It was the governor's office. So Preet Bharara is saying, I'm going to look into this. Doesn't mean he's going to find anything illegal, but certainly it's right for looking. And a lot of people feel once you start looking at this project, it could lead you into more with SUNY Polytechnic and Calieros, because Calieros has overseen tens of billions of dollars in public and private investments. Like I said, close to five governors and, you know, countless majority leaders now and two assembly speakers, one assembly speaker. So, you know, this could be a budding investigation into that whole setup over there.
Well, and one just has to wonder what the relationship. I don't know how to put this, because I am a former SUNY professor emeritus. I love SUNY, and I think it represents a huge break for many of our children in the state. But I'm afraid that the governor has pushed SUNY over and over again to be more politicized and to be more of an arm of the Cuomo administration. We see that in a number of different ways. What do you make of that?
Well, I think that I don't disagree, but I also think that really started under George Pataki. You know, I think he did a lot of that, and plus, on top of that, he cut investment in SUNY, but then cut to Cuomo. You know, we all know the governor himself likes to be in charge and involved in everything. He's hands-on in practically everything, and so, you know, he picks the SUNY board chairman. They pick the chancellor. He's really pushed them to do a lot of things, and he sees SUNY now as a major part of the economic development arm of the state. And so his administration is involved heavily with that. And, you know, he goes out and he announces these projects, you know, the Buffalo Billion and Utica and Albany nanotech projects, and that is all run through SUNY, but, you know, he wants to be the face of it as well.
We only have 2 minutes left. How are his polls looking, Governor Cuomo's, these days?
Yeah, not great. It was only a couple of years ago. He was, 70%, then 60%. Now he's been underwater. His favorability is around 50%. It dips under 50%. His job approval in the last couple of polls has been 39%. They'd argue that it's stabilized, but, you know, he spent the summer trying to get his poll numbers up. He spent a lot of time in New York City trying to win back the left wing of the party. And you haven't seen the numbers jump, although he's doing better in New York City than he is statewide.
My impression of the guy, who did have huge approval ratings in the very beginning, and then we did watch as he went into free fall, I think whoever's giving him advice now is giving him good advice, because I don't see him alienating the same number of people. The question to me has always been, has the damage been so substantial when he was in free fall that he can't recover?
Yeah, he had a really bad year. It is hard to go up to heights again unless something happens that we don't expect.
Yeah, that ain't gonna happen.
But I think he is getting advice. I also think he has refocused. You know, this fight with de Blasio and the left wing of the party has actually refocused him, and he seems more on his game than he has for most of the year. Mm. I think since the summer, we've seen the Andrew Cuomo politically that we saw the first couple of years, a lot more astute, a lot more engaged. He doesn't seem to be, like, bouncing back and forth from issue to issue, lurching from issue to issue. So I think the fight with de Blasio has actually, in a lot of ways, helped him and re-energized him and refocused him.
Yeah. Well, we've been talking to our friend, and we can never get enough of him, a guest, Ken Lovett, Bureau Chief for the New York Daily News. Ken, it's great to have you here and to have you joining us and to tell us what's going on. We very much appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Be well.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.